I agree with Ken. Ken asked me for a Diet Coke before the show, and I'm like, "What do you want? A coffee or a beverage? Is it always DC's? If you could have your way."
Probably Diet Pepsi more in DC, but I don't drink coffee.
No.
I've never had a cup of coffee in my life. I just don't like the taste of it.
Really?
Yep.
Wow, no
But
coffees.
first thing in the morning, though, I love a little can of Diet Pepsi.
The first thing in the morning at DC or DP?
Something cold. I like the cold. I like the bubblies. And, a little caffeine never hurts.
I'm a big fan. No, I'm a big fan. And no, and there's a big difference though between the canned and then a fountain from like a fast food.
Absolutely.
Right?
And they're a little different too. Like a Coke out of McDonald's is different than a Coke at Burger King.
Absolutely.
So.
The best is the McDonald's. If you can get a McDonald's,
Yeah.
you know what I mean? I don't know what I think they actually showed that there is something different. There's like more syrup or they add something more.
It's different.
It's different.
Yeah.
It hits different. For those who don't know, I got Ken back on the show. Listen to the first one. We go into, leadership stuff and, we talk about the city of Rochester. We're going to talk a little bit about the city of Rochester, but we never really got into, because for me, I'm a student of the game, love the history of how companies that I really admire and respect got to where they are, right? So if you think about Buckingham, starts in the 70s of sort, back in 1970, I don't remember the exact year. On Buckingham Street, what do you remember from the start?
Well, I wasn't born at the start,
Sure, sure,
so
sure.
very, but my childhood was what we called Oxford Square, which was Dogtown.
Yup.
The first office was right in front of Dogtown. So I grew up working, those buildings, those apartments, cleaning them out, seeing things I probably shouldn't see at a
Sure.
very young age.
So how old are you there?
I think probably like 12, 13 is when my dad let me start working.
Okay.
Maybe 14, but
And is it just residential at this point?
No, I think at that point they, had a bunch of industrial stuff.
Okay.
But mostly they hadn't really gotten to downtown yet.
Got it.
That was sort of a little later that my father started buying old buildings in the downtown, in the Inner Loop area.
What did that look like? Was that really thought out by your father and his partners? Was it purposeful? Or it's just a good opportunity? The city's basically giving these for free. I mean, it was a completely different world
Yeah,
then.
he got a lot of buildings for a dollar, back in the day when the city was just thankful someone would do something with the building and invest in it and get taxes paying again on it. But he calls himself the landlord of last resort because the worse the building, the better the opportunity. So, at a time where there wasn't a lot of activity, he was buying a lot of old buildings and it hadn't become the trend that it is now.
Yeah.
Nowadays you find a good post and beam brick building. There's a lot of people who know what to do with it.
Sure.
Back then he was one of the first. And that was really his sweet spot, was looking at an old building and figuring out what to do with it, how to get it to actually pencil, invest, do the whole package, and then manage it.
What was his background?
Well, he was a business. He had an MBA from Columbia, so he was always in the business. He actually worked for his father-in-law, the Lovenheims with Great Lakes Press, which is three brothers. My grandfather and his two brothers started a printing company. He eventually took over it, and they ended up selling it in the mid-'80s. And with that, he, really focused on Buckingham. And then my mom started her business. That was part of that opportunity
What
when
was
we
that
sold
business?
Home Trends or Quick Cook. So my mom had a mailer company. Originally, it was Microwave and More. So my mom in the early 80s decided microwaves are going to be the greatest thing ever. So
True.
she went out and bought everything you could imagine to cook in a microwave. and we were the guinea pigs. So we'd have.
So what would that look like? Yeah.
Well, we'd have turkey dinner and really dry turkey. You know, like she was figuring out how to cook in the microwave.
Wow.
And we were the ones she would try it on. And if we liked it, she would sell it.
Wow.
And that morphed into cleaning products and a much more home sort of goods in general. But yeah, she loved the microwave. That's where it all started. And her original partner was Judy Samloff, which is Harold Samloff's wife. And Harold was my father's first partner.
Okay.
So Harold and my father were tennis partners, and they bought a duplex on Buckingham. And that was the beginning of a relationship, and they both decided, you know, Harold's an attorney. They both decided to focus on that eventually and build it together.
What was the address on Buckingham? Do you remember?
I don't know. Okay. No, I mean, I know the building. I just,
if you drove by it, you'd see it. So making a big play into the city of Rochester when they were selling things for a dollar, that's in what, the '90s, early '90s, mid '90s. Was that going on?
I'm trying to think when he bought Michael Stern, which I believe was the first downtown sort of renovation he did.
Yep.
Prior to that, he was using, you know, University Business Center.
Yep.
That whole complex was the first one he and Harold bought. But that's,
what was that? Who owned that before? Do you remember? Was that a city property?
Oh, no. I think it was Gerber Plant.
Okay. That entire.
Yeah, or at least a big portion of it. I'm trying to remember. It's been a while.
Yeah, and that's okay. It's more of just, I'm so interested in like how these things came about, because now these are just absolute legacy properties.
Yeah, and a lot of this is done when I had left, you know.
So you're in what, college at this point, or school?
Yeah, I mean, I graduated in 93, and I didn't move back here until 2004.
Oh, okay.
And in that window, I went, you know, watching my father like do the little this and that, and then coming back going, wow, he's bought a lot of crap.
Yeah.
This is like a real business now. My dad's actually somewhat important around town.
Yeah.
And I didn't really watch it firsthand because I just was living in different places.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, and he and I talked about coming back here and would I be able to work for him. And he always told me, well, I don't know. You're going to have to earn that. If I'm bringing you in, I want you to come in with your own skill set. And, you know, so he and I agreed once I got my architectural license, I could come in as the in-house architect and sort of focus on development. And so that's what I was doing.
The architect, was that something you actually had a passion for?
Yeah, I'm a licensed
architect.
You're
right.
Yeah, and I still carry my license. I got a master's in it.
Okay, great.
And yeah, if it was up to me, I would be doing architecture all day.
Just designing all day long.
Yeah. The problem is when you wear multiple hats, the architect, the developer, and the owner, the architect usually goes home unhappy because I can't afford to build what I want to design, you know. I always want to build the Taj Mahal, but I can't do that, especially in Rochester.
Right.
So that part of me has to constantly kind of be kept in check of, okay, what's realistic about what we can do here? There's a budget, and I would love to spend all this money.
Yeah.
Amazing things in there. But if the building doesn't work, it doesn't work. You know, my father always told me that my biggest weakness would be the architect in me, because I would fall in love with the buildings and not the term sheet. And that's sort of the opposite of what, you know. So some of our ugliest buildings make the most money.
Absolutely.
It's the pretty ones that are really tough. The towers and, you know, the ones that we have a lot of debt on, and they're a little harder to, you know, take it apart and put it back together.
But you do get to... You do get to scratch that itch. I mean, especially with Mindex that you did, Butler Till building.
Every project that we do, I carve out something for myself to design.
Awesome.
So I keep that alive. Like Butler Till, there's a wood wall in the lobby. I got to design that wall.
You might not be able to go bananas on the whole building, but you get a little. You get a little cubby.
I get a little thing to kind of put my mark on. Yeah. And that keeps that part of me happy, at least.
Yeah, that's great.
But again, you know, Rochester's a tough place to do business for real estate.
Yeah.
So you got to make the numbers work.
How do we get it better?
You know, if we knew that.
Yeah.
Until we start recruiting new business, we're going to continue to just steal each other's tenants.
Yeah.
I mean, you see it downtown. Mm-hmm. First Federal and the Four Corners, that's pretty much empty.
Yeah.
And those tenants are mostly over by Parcel 5
right.
in that area. So, yeah, we're full, but we left giant holes. And if they don't come here, they go to the suburbs.
Right.
But what we're not seeing is a lot of suburban companies coming back downtown.
Right.
We got Constellation, but we lost a big attorney, you know, Nixon. That's kind of a wash. That doesn't really get us where we need to go.
Right.
So downtown is, it's one of those things that I love it and hate it.
Yeah.
But I'm not willing to give up on it. I think that this community deserves the best it can be. And we're working on a lot of different pieces of it. But, you know, for me, the thing that I keep getting caught up in is downtown, especially Inner Loop, was designed to be a business district. Very clearly, it was not so friendly. You know, if you look at Xerox, it's up on a pedestal.
Right.
It's kind of dark and,
yeah,
you know, it's intimidating. It's
yeah.
Not, right. And that's how downtown kind of was. And now we're trying to get downtown to act like a neighborhood. And it's kind of fighting itself because it's not really small scale. It's big buildings and parking that's not necessarily right next to it.
Right.
And, you know, we were fortunate because in some ways that we were converting offices to residential well before the pandemic.
Right.
Not because we wanted to, because that was the only thing that was seeming to work.
Sure.
And we did really good.
In what buildings were we talking about there?
Well, if you look at, you know, Tower 280.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
You know, that was...
What was that before? That was all office.
All Midtown Tower.
It was all Midtown Tower.
Yep, and there was a restaurant on the top. And we converted, you know, we have 3 floors of commercial, and then the rest are all residential. But, you know, you look at the Met or, you know, the Chase Tower, that's now got a lot of residential.
Yep.
Even Xerox is residential.
Yep.
So... the only surviving buildings right now have a mixed-use element. What we're still missing is the retail, and we're working on that. We got some good things going on at the Grove.
That's a sweet area.
Right. So we got a couple new tenants that we're announcing that should fill that completely up.
Great.
And we're working on getting office tenants off the ground floor, moving them up so we can just have retail because... you know, we have enough people living downtown. We should be able to get a market.
You think? I mean, you'd think. There's so many people down here now. Like, we need something here.
Yep. We do really good with events. You know, Parcel 5.
Crushes.
You know, Jazz Fest happens. We get 200,000 people. They love it. And then they don't come back
till
the following year.
Yeah, right.
So there's still the perception that it's not safe, which is really not true.
It's not true.
People, especially in the suburbs, like to think that downtown is the city, you know, but the real issues are happening not downtown, but they're happening on, you know.
Specific neighborhoods.
Yeah, like Avenue D or Joseph, like areas that are really like rough.
Yeah.
But they see those on TV and they think that's downtown.
Right.
And that's not the case. Inner Loop's actually a really safe area.
It's amazing.
You know, we got some homeless, but every city does. We're not really any worse than anywhere else. We just like to focus on it far too much.
I think part of the problem is, so there's two things. I'm of a generation, you know, 89. We never saw Rochester. Like, we were too young to actually see the Kodaks crushing it and, like, all these big businesses here, right? So then you have the older 60, 70-year-olds who did see that. And now it's not, but they haven't been back in maybe 10, 15 years to actually see all the new awesome changes have happened.
Yep.
I never got to actually see the Kodaks and the Xerox crushing it because I was a little kid. So all this is just, this is what it is. So I love downtown. This is just what I know. I never knew anything different. The crazy thing is my buddy's in Austin, Texas right now. He goes, you know, especially if you've traveled, you know, so if people who haven't traveled, this is kind of, you might not understand. I used to travel for work. I used to go to all these different cities. We're so lucky. Rochester is one of the best cities of all time. I mean, food, green space, our environment, our climate, you know, we don't have the issues of just wildfires and hurricanes and, you know, all these things that can really be a huge concern for folks, especially in Florida, with insurance, all these things that make it really, really tough to feel confident that your house is going to be here in 10 years. Oh, by the way, we have the clean water. We have the Great Lakes. So, you know, water is a commodity now. I mean, it's like we have all these great, we have the infrastructure. I think, you know, we actually talked about this a little bit. Let me just get back to my point on my buddy's in Austin, Texas. And he goes, dude, it's not great. Like you think all these places are great until you go there and you go, oh, they have real issues. And yes, we have our own problems too, but man, we really have it pretty good here.
We do. And we have a great scale. We're 10 minutes from everything.
Yes.
We have the Finger Lakes. We have Ontario. We have High Falls. We really have all the pieces. And you can see when you're downtown, there was once a lot of money here because those buildings are not cheap buildings.
Right.
But we're still getting out of that shadow and organically having to grow our own businesses, which takes a lot longer.
It does.
Than having someone come in and move their headquarters here. That's, you know, New York State's a tough place to do business. I don't think it's very apples to apples when you can compare it to the South.
Yeah.
And we have power issues.
That was the thing we talked about, you know, before. And what does that look like? Because we're not running against that so much. Like in a lot of the people listening, you know, we're smaller investors, whatever, getting into commercial, in commercial, smart. But for you, when you're trying to get large corporations, what does that look like? What's the issues?
It's a huge problem.
Hmm.
I mean, we are trying to sell ourselves as a tech hub, right?
Yeah.
How do you sell a tech hub if you don't have power? And there's lots of places we're now out of power. And, you know, we have this really amazing parcel in Brighton, 132 acres. And we got our first letter from RG&E 2012 saying we don't have enough power. And unless we pay for their equipment, we're in a standstill. And this is how it's been. And it's an amazing parcel. It should be.
So this is 15 years going on.
Yeah. And we're still waiting. And now there's lawsuits that aren't even ours.
I've seen these lawsuits.
Right. But, you know, Henrietta's out of power. I think Penfield is getting up there. Brighton already is. What are we doing about it? Nothing. No one wants to pony up. And, you know, I don't really want to get too far into that. But, you know, in order to get past that, we'd have to invest millions of dollars on RG&E's equipment just to turn around and use it and pay.
Right, and pay. Right. Right.
So we're creating customers for them.
Right.
You know.
But you have to build the infrastructure.
But we have to do that because we're the one that crossed that line of, we have power, then we don't have power. Whoever takes it over that line is the one responsible.
This should be something that I'm sure our lawmakers are aware of this. Are they upset about this?
You know, and RG&E is definitely aware of it, and they take a lot of hits for it, and it's not really all their, it's the PSC. It's bigger than them. They're just one of the players, and this idea that we're actually out of power is something that has never really been dealt with, you know? And unless we have a big property like a Fairlife or
right,
where they put money in or the state puts it in, you know, as a developer, it's going to take 3 or 4 years to get the equipment on site to use it.
Right.
But we got to pay for it now. And then we get to talk to potential users. You know, we just can't, in this climate right now, invest that much with the hope that we'll find someone. And I'm hesitant to talk to anyone because I don't have the power. And,
right. You know, you're like in the standstill, like you said.
Yeah, like you talk to GRE and they get all these potential, you know, RFPs or, you know, companies looking for sites. And you tell them, well, we're about 3 or 4 years out. they don't, you're off the list.
Right.
Real quick.
And these are big companies that could come here and create all these jobs and all this economic development.
The shovel ready concept needs to include the power. And it's, if you have it, you have it. If you don't, I don't know. Because eventually we're really going to run out of power, you know, with all the homes wanting to be electric, you know, where's that coming from? Because we're not going to have the power.
This is a big issue.
It's a really big issue. And it's
Other cities have this in upstate New York? Like Syracuse and Buffalo?
Not. I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
I've heard about it downstate. But Syracuse, you know, with, you know, they got a couple of big projects going on, but they apparently, their location is right where the main power, the big lines go through. And then they kind of follow Route 81 south.
Mm.
So they have it all right there.
Mm.
And as far as I know, they're okay. And they're not Argini. They're a different provider. And they put a bunch of money in. I don't know. I like to think that it's going to get resolved. But at this point, I'm just kind of waiting.
Man, that's really, it's pretty scary. if we're running out of power and there's not already solutions in place.
Right. There's no direct path other than the developer paying, you know, and then there's a timing issue. So
I wanted to talk about Tower 280 because it's such an unbelievable building. How does something like that come about? And why did Buckingham choose to take on that type of project?
Well, it was actually Bob Morgan, who had it, he had an original partner, and they were playing around with it for about a year before Bob called my father and said, look, I got an old building. You're the guy who knows how to take it apart and put it back together. That's not really what he does. Mm. He does more ground up. So my dad looked at it and said, you know, this is what we do. And we got in. And
Now, to give me the idea, like, is this vacant? I mean, how
100%.
It was 100% vacant.
The box on top was completely with no walls.
Wow.
And then there was just the brick, you know, exposed.
What year is this? 2010?
2012, I believe we came in. 2014 is when we started doing work on it. But, you know, he passed early September and we didn't have financing yet. And fortunately, you know, for me, Bob Morgan is our partner, and he was willing to continue with us.
Mm.
And, you know, it's worked out. You know, and now we got the clock in there.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You know, you talk about how the older guys, they remember downtown.
Right.
Well, this clock, you know, we have to sort of embrace some of those things because the clock has so much history and memories, and people just come out of the woodwork saying, thank you. I brought my kids there. I used to come down here. We so wish we had that reason to come back downtown.
Mm.
And we just don't have it yet.
Not yet.
You know, there were, you know, people used to shop downtown. They came downtown to shop.
I sometimes want to go like we need to change up, we need to make a big splash, right? Sometimes, like I had Max Giannini on, and, you know, they just bought the Sibley, or not, the Hiram Sibley building and then a bunch of the Easton Alexander buildings. And I'm like, don't you just sometimes think we should just put a casino downtown? and he's like, probably not a great idea. I'm like, but just something, just some splash, just something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe not the best idea in the long term, but God, just something to make a splash downtown. Get people going, wow, that's there?
Yeah. I mean, we have pieces to work from. We're just not very good at it.
Yeah.
We have a river. We don't do anything on it.
Nope.
We literally have a miniature Niagara Falls.
Right.
And we've turned our back on it
for
years. We're just starting to kind of embrace that. That should be a focal point for everybody. You know, the things that we do have is, you know, the Strong Museum is incredible.
It's insane. Yep.
That's probably the biggest draw.
Yeah, you're right.
For the region.
Yep.
And, you know, we still need campus downtown. I know the MCC is sort of there, but every other city seems to have a school and students really downtown.
Good point.
So we've haven't necessarily planned well for that because back in the day, the big three, the Xerox and B&L and Kodak, they were making so much money. There was never going to run out.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things you just can't imagine those companies actually leaving downtown. And, you know, Xerox was the last one and they're gone. So it's a big building to refill.
It really is. God, I wish I was a part of that. I wish I saw that. I wish I was like seeing like Kodak have the 20,000 employees. Like how insane Rochester must have been.
The whole inner loop was because of Kodak.
Right.
You know, to get 200,000 people in and out as fast as you can. And, you know, it turned out to be not a great urban solution.
Right.
You know, it really separated the city in some ways, and we're undoing that.
Yeah.
The first infill obviously has been very successful.
Super successful.
The north is going to be a little different.
I was going to ask you about that. What are your thoughts on that? How does that get developed appropriately? Like if you could be the planner on that project and the architect and everything, what could go there, do you think?
You know, for me, when I look at that, I see connections to the baseball stadium that are currently blocked because of the inner loop there.
Mm.
High Falls is a little disconnected. If we could start using those and infill that, so, you know, new buildings get full here. It's just the way it is. The old ones seem to fall behind.
Right.
But people want new structures and new housing. And again, how do we get businesses down here? And we have a great baseball stadium, but let's say you want to go out for a drink before the game. There's nothing around there.
Nothing around there.
But we have tons of parking. So those are great lots.
Right.
And once we kind of open up the Cascade District,
yep.
You know, does that going to bleed into the baseball stadium? Get some new housing, and now we're kind of got something going.
Hmm.
The problem is we have a lot of vacancies right now.
Yeah.
And we just don't have the office needs.
No. You know, it's part of the office issue, like that B, C class office. Like, what do people do with that, you think?
All we're doing is converting it or making it affordable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the affordable topic is big because if you look downtown, all the projects are affordable.
Right.
And there's a huge need for it. But it also comes with a, what does that mean for that direct area? Is that going to change the level of retail?
Right.
You know, you put affordable housing. Can they go out to dinner at a nice steakhouse? Probably not.
Right.
So, okay, that means that that area maybe isn't the best spot for it.
Right.
And still, with everything we're doing, we're still really short.
Right.
So, you know, what does that mean? Are we just going to, because the programs are so favored for the developer.
Right.
Everyone can make that work, but that doesn't mean it's the best long-term solution.
Right. It's the only thing that can work right now, right?
Right. And that's what, you know, and it's a short-term fix for maybe a long-term problem.
Hmm.
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, once affordable housing is in place, it's not going anywhere.
Right.
So, you know, how that translates to the neighborhood, it could be great. It could, you know, cap some things. I don't know. We'll have to kind of wait and see. But
one of the things that you talked about is how Buckingham started a lot of like the bigger deals were in, when they first was in industrial. You know, these were, I think of like the Lyle Business Center.
Lyle Ave.
Was that one of the first?
Yeah.
Okay. And just the gumption that you kind of have to take on to even to buy it for a dollar, it's still a massive undertaking of rehab and all these different things that have to be done in something like that. But then how does something like this beautiful property, like Eagles Landing, like love that building, love that campus. What was there? How does something like that come about? Do you remember? Were you a part of it then?
I was, I think, very early on, because that was my father and Rich LaFroyce.
Okay.
And Rich has really got the Henrietta Market. That's sort of his, you know, they don't do a lot downtown.
Right.
At least they don't own a lot downtown.
Right.
And he and my father were really good friends. And
was he doing a lot of the building? Like, is that how the relationship started? Like a lot of construction stuff on bigger projects?
Yeah. We were more on the management and the leasing side. And LaFroyce would do all the construction.
Got it.
But, you know, their partnership was really critical because my father always made a point, be very careful who your partners are. Make sure you guys have the same risk tolerance and you have capital on the same level. You take on partners and they can't keep their end up, you're going to have, you know, carrying them. And that sort of gets old pretty quick.
Yeah.
So, you know, he and Rich, my father and Rich, they were in Florida. They were really going to do some great things together. And Rich has continued. But Eagle's Landing was a flex. You know, it was exactly what Rich does.
They built that then?
They built it with us as partners.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know if that was something that you bought.
No, we bought the land.
You built it. Got it. Okay. Yeah. So that's how that all happens.
And then the Schlegel building in front of it is our building. That's not Rich's. But, you know, they vacated a lot of it, and now we have Goodwill in there and a couple other tenants. And really, we need more industrial spaces, but the market doesn't want to pay what it takes to build the building. So it's a weird dynamic. Most markets, you can get that to work.
Right.
We have a lot of demand, but if it's going to take, you know, $11 a foot to make it pencil, people are only paying $6.
Yeah, what is up with that? Because, you know, rents in residential have gone up dramatically, but people still want $5 a foot.
And they're still getting $5 a foot.
Yeah, so why and how? And what are we doing about that?
You know, in other markets, it's not the case.
Right.
Even in Buffalo and Syracuse, they get more.
Right.
I don't know why Rochester refuses to sort of just, I mean, I guess if maybe all the, you know, landlords got together and said, we're going to make sure everything's 7 and above, we could get there.
Sure.
But it's a tough time to be in real estate in the commercial side right now.
It is.
And sometimes you just take the deal, whatever you can get.
Yeah, I think about, you know, one of the reasons why we moved into commercial is just the scalability, the you know, you hope to, a tenant will take it and, you know, be there long term, and it's management friendly in that sense. And then I do have this hopeful thought that, you know, some of the bigger buyers of industrial right now, like Ironhorn, and I know they've worked with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
My hope, because I don't know them, is that that will lift up all ships and then they can reset the price. And I don't know if that's happened yet or if it is going to happen, but that would be one of my like alphas in my head going, okay, they're doing this. There's gotta be a plan, hopefully, of what they're going to do, you know, cause I do think that needs to reset. I mean, if a one bedroom in the city is a nicely done, but can go for $2,000 in some of these apartments, right? I mean, now like just a general, you know, nice, decent apartment, one bedroom, you know, $1,400, $1,500, $1,600. You know, you can't find anything for less than $1,200 in a decent spot, but it just has not carried over to industrial.
Yeah, and all the expenses around it have gone up.
Correct.
But the leases haven't, which means it's getting harder and harder to get things built. And even, you know, the residential, it's, as landlords, we're losing more and more of our rights.
Yes.
You know, with the whole good cause eviction, and, you know, it's making for it to be more challenging, especially when you have a couple, I don't want to say bad tenants, but troublemaking tenants. You can't get rid of them.
No.
And what happens is the good tenants leave and the bad ones have all the protection.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, we've sold some residential in the past year that didn't really feel like we normally would want to, but you know, it was the right time. And
yeah, like long term, it wasn't something you guys wanted to probably
We're trying to figure out as a management company, what do we really want to be focused on?
And what do you want to be focused on?
I like the industrial. I'm still, you know, convinced that that's one single tenant and 100,000 feet. I love that. But small office is doing well again. You know, a lot of people just are a little hesitant to sign 10-year leases.
Yeah.
You know, they want 3 years, but they want the build out just the same, you know. And so the banks are a little hesitant to loan on such a short lease. And, you know, everyone's just a little nervous about what the future is going to, you know. The political arena is obviously very, I don't want to say problematic, but it's certainly, you know, it's all over the news every day.
Yeah.
What's going on today?
Right. Which is not helpful for giving people confidence.
Right.
To like, sign 10-year leases.
You know, are we going down? Are we hit the bottom? Are we in a recession? You know, it's hard to say, but I'd like to think we're in a cycle and you just survive these cycles. Like 2008, when that was a big...
Yeah, how did that go for you guys? What did that look like?
Well, I wasn't actually working at Buckingham yet.
Okay.
But I know that from stories, I know my father, he pretty much didn't smile for a couple of years. You know, it was tough.
Right.
But following that, there was a huge upswing.
Right.
You know, just got to survive the correction and then find those opportunities, you know, because when things are bad, people sometimes will give away a building for just because they got to stop the bleeding.
Right.
So that's where you get in, get a good deal, and you have enough capital to kind of weather it for a couple of years and then get a great deal.
It's a lot of space to weather back in 2008, probably for Buckingham at that point, where you're just like, oh, God.
Yeah. You know, I wasn't part of it. I just know that, you know.
He didn't smile for a couple of years.
Yeah. That's, yeah. It was a tough time.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we never, you know, our generation, the investors that are in my group or just wherever, haven't really experienced a recession.
And I use, you know, Rich Lefroy's as sort of a mentor. And I talked to him about, okay, you've seen a lot. This is not the first time you've been through one of these. And he goes, just, you got to stay calm. Don't get impatient. Just go with where it's going and when it's over, be in a good position because that's when the upside will really hit.
That's good advice.
So, yeah, trying to just get our management team and making sure if we're selling properties that have big capital needs coming up or they're just not cash flowing, let's swap those out for something, you know, a little more conservative. But, we're good there for 10 years. So
no, that's excellent. And I know we got to wrap up here. So I had like one or two questions I just wanted to ask you specifically about, you know, Buckingham. Because if we had this conversation again in 2035, what do you want to think or say that, you know, maybe Buckingham has accomplished or is looking to accomplish in the next 20 years?
Well, me personally, I hope to be in a hole sitting on a beach in Hawaii.
Okay, good.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Yeah.
That means you hired well.
Well, I have, and we're kind of continuing that. But, you know, when you go through something like I went through with my folks, it kind of reminds you that life's short. Enjoy it while you can. Don't wait for tomorrow. It's one of the big differences between, like, my father and I is this was his. He loved it. He would work all night if you let him. I'm home with my kids. I want to have a little more balance.
Yeah.
You know, I want to enjoy my time while I'm still young enough to actually enjoy it.
Yeah.
So, but Buckingham itself, you know, we're working on getting a little outside of this market.
Okay. Yeah. Where?
We got a couple buildings exactly, that we're working on in Syracuse.
Syracuse.
Syracuse seems to be a really good market. Their sort of leadership at Center State is really good. I always try to say, like, they combined all those groups. And we don't. We have GRE, we have the Chamber, we have RDDC, you know, Rock 25 or One Rock. They put all of those under one roof, and they've really done well with it. So
we need strong leaders here.
We do. You know, it's a, you know, Malik does the best he can.
Sure.
I think he, you know, he got played a tough hand, but he's here every day working. So I give him a lot of credit. Can't really get everyone happy.
No.
So, and we have a lot of problems.
We do.
And, you know, as far as the future, it's hard to say, but, we want to grow. Right now we're doing some addition by subtraction. But the vision's there and the focus is there. And, we're trying to get the best people in place while we can, and then really, you know, get some deals done.
Let's get some deals done. I think that's the goal for the next 10 years for us too, is just, you know, weather the storm, be focused, stay focused on one thing, which is industrial, not all crazy stuff.
And downtown, like as much as downtown drives me nuts, but I think Rochester at some point is going to be that hot city, you know, Oklahoma City or Columbus or, you know, or even Providence. Like, these cities were every bit as in bad shape as we were.
Right.
And they flipped it around and they're thriving. And like you said earlier, we're in a great spot. You know, we have the weather, we have the fresh water. At some point, the South is going to come back up north because, you know, it's just, who knows with the weather. And we're going to be in a good position.
That's the interesting part, and I'll leave us with this, is that, you know, a blue state, which we are, the bluest of the blue, can be a blue ocean compared to, like, a red state where a lot of money from, you know, traditionally you don't see a lot of companies in Texas and Florida investing in New York, but you do see a lot of New York companies investing in those areas. So that does give the opportunity for folks who are here that if you keep doing the right things and you really try to stay strong and keep a good balance sheet and all those great things, that we could be primed for a really great thing once that does occur. It's going to happen. People are coming back here. It's just, how do we, you know, how do you just position yourself to take full advantage of that situation? And when does it happen? Is it in 10 years or is it in 50 years?
And try not to be impatient.
Impatient.
As, you know, because, you know, one of the hardest lessons in development is that it's an exercise of patience. I mean, development takes so long between acquiring a property and then coming up with a concept and then getting the approvals,
right,
then building the building, then filling it. You know, it could be, you know, 5-10 years before it really gets fully in motion.
So you can go full cycle and maybe refinance or something. I mean, look at the Sibley building. It's been almost 10 years and they still haven't done a refinance on that project.
Yeah. But like, thank God that Wynn came in.
Thank God.
You know, and like Andy Glina, what he does at Xerox, you know, we sold it to him.
Yep.
And Rochester's different in that sense that the property owners work together.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not really enemies because I need him to be successful for us.
Absolutely.
So like Andy and I talk a lot about what they're doing, what we're doing, what's working. Let's make sure we have some synergies for
the
betterment of downtown.
That's cool.
I knew that we weren't going to be able to do the Xerox building. We just, for whatever reason, some partners didn't want to spend the money, and it was going to take a lot of money.
Yep.
So having him do it is a win for everybody.
Absolutely.
And I can only imagine the stress that he's had taking that one on.
Yeah.
Because we've done similar ones like that.
Yeah.
But he's got to make it. We all got to make it. We just got to keep sticking together and, you know, keep working, trying to get downtown to be what it can be.
Sticking together and keep working. I like it. Well, Ken, thank you.
Yeah.
As always, this has been amazing. Guys, thanks for watching. Take care.